With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, I've got good friend of the program, Jovan Bua, here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Pacers deciding to potentially explore some trades for some of their core pieces. And then we're going to talk about the team that Jovan covers, the Los Angeles Lakers, who are 12-12 and in the midst of one of the weirder seasons that I can remember, I feel like. Before we dive in with Jovan, I just want to remind everyone here, please go subscribe to the YouTube page. You can find it at Game Theory Podcast with Sam Vecini on YouTube. We have like 650 followers. I just started this fucking thing like 5 days ago. I'm blown away with the response that you guys have been willing to subscribe and to spend your time just clicking that button. Thank you so much. But let's talk to Jovan now, who I'm really excited. Jovan has a new project starting up. I don't think he wants to get into it, but I'm excited to be able to promote Jovan's thing soon. Jovan, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you. Yeah, new project, Stargazing, coming out, NBA Culture Podcast, talking to different figures and influencers that are around NBA superstars. And I think these are people that don't necessarily get the shine that they deserve. And some of them you've seen before, some of them you haven't. But I think it's something that I'm really passionate about. I've been working on for a couple of years now. So that launches December 19th, so be on the lookout for that.
When Jovan says he's been working on this for a couple of years, like, it's not an exaggeration. I remember going out to dinner with him and Jack Appleby, shout out Jack, seriously, 2.5 years ago, probably. And you said that, like, this is something you really wanted to do, you really wanted to dive into, and you thought it was a really good idea. And I feel, did you even, like, record a couple things? Like, I felt like you were, if you hadn't recorded, you had, like, booked a couple things.
Yeah, I was looking into studios. I had had some meetings. I had a 40-plus person guest list that I was like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to start talking to people. And I had talked to some people, and they were on board with it if we did go ahead with it. It was just a timing thing. And you know, it's hard to launch a podcast. And, you know, it's as you know. And so... there's a lot that goes into that, and it just ended up that this was the right time to do it. We have a culture vertical where it makes sense to place it, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I think we've already recorded 3 interviews, and I think some of the stuff is really powerful and incredible, and I think it's going to be a really interesting listen for people.
Keep on the lookout for Stargazing when it goes live. I think that Jovan is going to try and do like a full first season and then kind of see where it stands after that. But let's talk about some basketball. So the Indiana Pacers, it was reported earlier today by The Athletic, I believe that it was Shams that originally reported this, that they are finally willing to explore some moves for their core pieces, including Domantas Sabonis, Miles Turner, and Caris LeVert. Remember, Malcolm Brogdon actually can't be traded over the course of this season before the trade deadline because he signed a 2-year, $45 million extension back in October. But most of the rest of this roster seems to be fair game at this point. And I'm fascinated by what's going to happen with the Pacers, because this is a team that has started 10-16. I mean, look, man, like, I'm sorry to Pacers fans, but like, this is just kind of a boring team right now. Like, that, I don't know what the direction is, and that is concerning. I guess we'll start with concerning. It's kind of felt like they're trying to contend with a group of players that are paid somewhere between $17 and $24 million. All of their core pieces are between that number. In an NBA era where more and more you look at the best teams around the league, the Nets, the Lakers, the Bucks, these teams have salary structures where they have like two or three max guys, and then the rest of the roster is somewhere between $5 million and the minimum, with maybe one guy in the middle there. So for the Pacers to be trying to compete with just a bunch of middle-tier guys, it just has capped their ceiling for so long, and frankly, the product just feels a little bit stale at this point, right, Jovan?
Yeah. I think, I would say they're worse than I thought they would be. I thought they'd be kind of around 500 and maybe battling for that 7-8 seed, or at least, you know, the play-in tournament, which they could still get to technically. Yeah. But I think what's interesting to me is if you look at the history of the Pacers under their ownership, they are always like a bad season for the Pacers is like 35, 37 wins. Like they have just consistently been a solid team that like at worst is maybe a little bit under 500, at best is, you know, we've seen some really good Pacer teams through the years. The Malice at the Palace team, I think had a legit shot to win the championship, right?
Yeah, and it did.
But we, you know, the Paul George era and, you know, so on and so forth. So the Pacers have kind of been like the Utah Jazz of the East, where they're a, you know, small mid-market team that can just consistently wins and consistently puts out a playoff caliber team. And, you know, I think on the one hand, that's been great if you're a Pacers fan, right? Because you know, they don't really believe in tanking and they haven't tanked. And they just kind of are always in that mix of, you know, maybe that, you know, they have a late lottery pick and they add some talent. In a Paul George, in a Miles Turner, stuff like that. But for the most part, they're just kind of this consistent team that is just sort of rebuilding while still being solid. But I do think they have obviously hit a ceiling, and it's like it's hard to contend when you don't have a top 10 player, right? Like, yeah. But even stretching that out to top 15, top 20, like they don't have that guy. So yeah. I just don't, like, to me, their ceiling currently, if everything goes right, is like a six seed that pushes Miami to six games in the first round. Like, and that's like their best case scenario. And their worst case is kind of what we're seeing, which is there are several games under 500 and they might not even sniff the play-in tournament. So I think for them to rebuild and, you know, look for that franchise guy, I think makes a lot of sense. It's just interesting to me because that's not a direction the Pacers have ever gone historically.
Yeah, and it is interesting. You mentioned the idea that you expected them to be better. Honestly, like, their underlying numbers expect them to be better. They have a 1.6 net rating, which is to say they've outscored their opponent by 1.6 points per 100 possessions. Typically, that would be commensurate with like a winning record, you know, something like two or three games over 500 at this point in the season. And the fact that they are sitting at 10-16 is largely a result of the fact that they've just been disastrous in close games. I think that they're something like 3-12 in games decided by like 6 points or something like that. So it's tough to try and nail down why that would be the case, but I feel like end of game scenarios, so much of it comes down to being able to have a guy who can get a clean look and who can knock down a shot when defenses tighten up. And look, like, all due respect to Caris LeVert, all due respect to guys like Malcolm Brogdon, Domantas Sabonis, I think they're all really good players. Like, Malcolm Brogdon is worth the $24 million a year that he's going to get paid. Domantas Sabonis is worth his deal. Caris LeVert, I think, is worth his deal at $17, $18 million a year. They aren't, like, the guy on a roster. Like, they might be able to make a key shot at the end of a game, but I don't know that I count on any of those guys to do it consistently. So it's almost like understandable to me that they're in this position. And then on top of it, new coach and Rick Carlisle, who I would imagine does have like a fairly strong voice, just given Rick Carlisle's, you know, history within the league, his stature within the NBA. I would imagine that the inclusion of his voice has led to some real conversations regarding where this organization is going. Herb Simon, their owner, I believe is 87 years old. He has resisted throughout the course of his career owning the Pacers, a situation where he wants to totally rebuild. I'll be surprised if it goes down the direction of like them being just disastrous for this year, in next year and into the future. And on top of it, they have Kevin Pritchard, who has been around for a while at this point. And I think that finally they've decided to make a move. So I guess that, like, let's just kind of talk about a few fake trades here before we move on from the Pacers. My number one favorite idea for the Indiana Pacers is consummating a trade with the San Antonio Spurs involving Domantas Sabonis. I think that that would just be such a fun pairing for the Spurs. They have a need at the center position. As much as I like Jakob Poeltl and think that he's a terrific defensive center, I think that they could use more firepower from their front court offensively. They obviously have a glut of perimeter players in guys like DeJounte Murray, Derek White, Lonnie Walker, Josh Primo, Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, Trey Jones. Like, I think I'm even missing one or two, to be honest. There just seems to be a real potential lining up of assets and need for the Spurs. And then for the Pacers, they can kind of pick and choose what they want their rebuild to look like based on what they want from the Pacers. Like, if they're willing to go more down a long-term road of rebuilding, you take something like Josh Primo, who has like a really high upside. You take the Suns' 2022 first round pick. You take the Thaddeus Young deal to salary match or whatever. And then maybe you get one more asset. If they want to go and try and make this a bit of a quicker turn, maybe you take someone like Keldon Johnson, who's averaging 15 points a game and shooting 40% from three as a 21 or 22 year old. And, you know, hope that he can contribute within the next year or two to a potential playoff team. I just think there are so many options there that that kind of deal just lines up and makes sense to me on a number of levels.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, first and foremost, you have to, I think you have to trade Domantas. Like, to me, if you're going down this road, unless, I mean, you got to explore what you could get for Miles Turner and what you can get for Caris LeVert, but you're going to get the biggest return, in my opinion, for Domantas Sabonis, right? And yeah. I think, and like, again, unless you can make some type of move where you think you can remain competitive and you know, maybe take a jump trading one of those guys for something that maybe a player, a team is undervaluing, I think you have to start with Sabonis and then go from there. But it's tricky then because he's your best player. So, if you don't want to fully rebuild and go down that road of being a 20-25 win team, like, it's hard to find that balance. But I like that trade. It's funny too, because I kind of view the Pacers as like, I compared them to the Jazz historically, but they kind of remind me of the Spurs the last few years. until they got rid of DeRozan, where it was like, and DeRozan, you know, we've seen what he's doing in Chicago. So I don't want to like undersell how good he is. But I think it was kind of like 8-10 deep, you know, really just solid team, but you didn't have that top 20-25 guy who's going to lead you to, a series win, let alone, contention. So yeah. I think that they're both kind of the Pacers are where the Spurs were like a year ago. And now they have to make that tough decision of what direction are we going to go? And you saw, LaMarcus went to the Nets and now DeMar went to Chicago, and like, the Spurs are at the bottom of the West, but I think that they are probably on a better path than the Pacers are currently to getting back to contention. So and now they can make a move for Sabonis and maybe jump up a couple spots in the West, depending on who they give up. So I like that deal for both sides. I think it makes sense. If I'm the Pacers, I push for DeJounte Murray. If I'm the Spurs, that's where I draw the line in the sand and say I'm not giving up DeJounte Murray. So but you get me. You give me DeJounte Murray and Domantas Sabonis. That's a pretty good foundation in their mid-20s. You know, heading into their respective primes.
Yeah, I agree. I can't give up DeJounte Murray in that deal. He's been awesome to start the year.
He's so good.
he's really taken a leap. Like, I don't think enough people have recognized how good DeJounte Murray has been to start this season. The other deal that makes a little bit of sense to me is I wonder if you could get Miles Turner to Charlotte in a deal involving PJ Washington. Because as we literally just watched last night, I mean, Joel Embiid just annihilated them. He absolutely blew them apart. He had 43 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists. It was the most dominant I think I maybe have seen a player play this season so far. And look, Mason Plumlee is out right now. Like, they didn't really have like a great option to slow him down. But even when Mason Plumlee's in, I don't know that I've liked what I've seen from him as an interior defender this season. You go out and you get Miles Turner, it fits within their offensive scheme because they really like to play five out because Miles can shoot. And then defensively, he would significantly upgrade what has been, in my opinion, one of the worst interior defenses in the NBA this season. So something around Miles Turner for PJ Washington and another asset, that feels like another deal that makes a lot of sense to me personally, is the Pacers kind of look around exploring what deals are out there for their core pieces.
I like that one too, because I just think he fits, as you said, the five out. He has that length and athleticism that I think the Hornets really need. And I'm high on Miles Turner still. Like, I think he's one of those guys that has needed a change of scenery for a while. And I've been like, which contender is going to step in and you know, nab him and have him, you know, play a big, because I think he just, I know he hasn't, you know, he hasn't been the most consistent player, and he hasn't necessarily developed into what he was drafted to be. But at the same time, I think there are those flashes that you see, and I think just in general he's better and more productive than people give him credit for. And there's kind of been this perception of him that he, you know, because he hasn't lived up to that, people just don't value what he actually is and what he actually does. But that, again, that length, that athleticism, the ability to stretch the floor, and just, I think he's a really talented guy. So if I were the Hornets or someone else, I would, you know, that's a guy that you can get for a much cheaper price than a Domantas Sabonis. So I'd be targeting Miles and trying to get him for a team that needs a center.
Yeah, you know, Miles Turner, it's interesting. Like, when he's going, like when he really has it moving, I think there are not 10 better defensive players or 10 more impactful defensive players in the NBA. He is a monster on the interior. He's gotten really good at playing drop coverage defensively. Yeah, I really am a believer in Miles Turner as well. I think that a team that is in need of a center could really do well by exploring a potential Turner move. And to be honest, like a team that has kind of been interesting to me in regard to Miles Turner, like the Lakers weirdly do have the salary matching to make that work. It would help on a number of levels.
That would help a lot.
His ability to space the floor would really open up a lot of their lineups with Russell Westbrook as well. They could play Miles Turner and Anthony Davis together very easily. Talen Horton-Tucker, Kendrick Nunn gets you there salary-wise. They would have to add some assets somehow that I don't.
One of the picks they don't have.
it'd be tricky. The Pacers would really have to love Talen Horton-Tucker for that to work.
Which, you know,
Horton-Tucker,
he just turned 21. You don't know, but I mean, I think that's a dream for the, because then you start Miles and AD, and then you just platoon. You know, you basically keep one of them on the floor, and I think from there basically play. You know, you'll play your first and third quarter shifts with those two together, and then the rest of the game is just one of those two at the five. And I like that a lot. That was like a sneaky one. I wasn't sure if we wanted to touch on, just because I do think you have to love Talen, and I don't think if he was playing the way he played the first three games of the season, like that guy was averaging 23 a game and looked really good. But since then he's kind of fallen off offensively, and I think still, you're looking for that consistency that he hasn't really showed yet. So, I mean, who knows? He just turned 21. He has shown those flashes where Maybe you can talk yourself into that. But I think if I'm trading Miles Turner, I probably want a little more.
I think I agree with you on that. I'm trying to think of other teams. I mean, it's tricky. I mean, honestly, the Spurs, like, maybe they could have interest in Turner over Sabonis. It's interesting.
I mean, like, this, I don't know, Portland? Like, I know. I mean, yeah. They have Nurkic, but I feel like they're just kind of a team that need to change something there. And I know we weren't going to touch on Portland too much, but because there's a lot to touch on. But
the marathon podcast I recorded last week was earlier this week. I was just like, you know, like, do I really need to do more of this?
I just remember, like, because, you know, I covered the Lob City Clippers, and
yeah,
it feels like Portland, and you can make a case like even Utah's kind of in this mix as well, where Utah's better than Portland, obviously. But with the last couple years of Lob City, it was just like there have been some rumors of, like, are they going to trade DJ, or, like, is it, you know, right. They had that great record and that great stretch without Blake when it was just Chris, DJ, pick and roll. And it was like, do the Clippers flip Blake for something and just go all in on the Chris, DJ, pick and roll? And, like, they never did that. And ultimately, Chris just left to Houston, and that, you know, situation dissolved. But I do wonder with the Portland situation, like, if they are really committed to, we want to keep Dame, we want to keep him happy, we want to build at least a team that has a shot, because I think as currently constructed, they're a one and done in the first round. Like, they're losing in four or five games, whoever they play. Not to say that Nurkic necessarily is the problem, but I do think Turner is a better defender and is, you know, the type of guy that might be able to correct a lot of Dame and CJ's limitations on that end. So that's one. And now if you're Indiana, I don't know, you know, why would you want Nurkic necessarily compared to Turner?
Like, well, maybe the move
is... they're close, but...
Maybe the move is CJ. Like, you do something like CJ and something else for Caris LeVert and Miles Turner. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder if that...
That could work, yeah. No, so I just think it might be a situation where, like, you got to mix something up because the status quo just isn't working anymore.
The last team I want to mention for Miles Turner, the Warriors would be terrifying with him.
Yeah.
The Warriors would be utterly terrifying. And
so that's what Wiseman and...
yeah,
are
maybe.
Are you giving up Wiseman in that? You kind of have... I think you have to, right?
I don't think that the Warriors would want to.
I don't think they would either. But
I'll say this. Like, if they wanted to do Moses Moody and Kuminga, like, I don't think the Pacers would get a better offer for Turner.
I'd probably
just rather move Wiseman if I'm them. And honestly, if you're the Pacers and you're getting James Wiseman for Miles Turner, like, are you... I don't know that you're getting a better deal than that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Just given the upside that that James Wiseman possesses. You know, I had Anthony Slater on the podcast last week, and he said that ownership with the Warriors is still very, very committed to James Wiseman. And he would be stunned if they moved him. I think the Warriors have other assets that they could move in a deal for Miles Turner if they really wanted to do so. Like I said, like, I, if you go out and you get Moses Moody and something else for Miles Turner, I don't know that you're doing a whole lot better than that. You go out and you get Jonathan Kuminga for Miles Turner, I don't think you're probably not doing better than that. Maybe something with, like, depending on if you like PJ Washington more, I can see that. But the Warriors have the assets to where if they really wanted to take a swing for Miles Turner and they really wanted to include James Wiseman, I think they probably win the title if they get Miles Turner, because you're talking about having a stretch five that is elite defensively, mixing with Draymond Green. That's a terrifying, like, that starting lineup is then Stephen Curry, you know, one of Jordan Poole or Andrew Wiggins, depending on what you want to do there. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and Miles Turner. And, like, I don't know how anyone scores on them. And then they're going to be absolutely elite offensively at that point.
I mean, I like Kevon Looney. I think that he just does all the little things that don't necessarily translate in a box score. But going from Kevon Looney to Miles Turner is quite the upgrade. And we still don't know. Like, I think everyone loves to throw out, and you know better than anybody, like the Wiseman ceiling and sort of the DeAndre Ayton comparison and some of the development that DeAndre made last season. But we don't know that James Wiseman is going to become that. And I kind of view like the Warrior situation as like, you know, I know they've talked about being sustainable and contending for the next 20 years. And like, well, first off, Steph's not playing the next 20 years. So you have that window of 5 years. Like, I don't know, like how long is Steph like, and you know, he has the early career injury history. So you don't know like when that stuff pops up again, if it ever does. But like, you look at a guy like Steve Nash and how elite he was deep into his 30s. Like, I guess that's like the blueprint for Steph.
Yeah.
But I do think, and I think, you know, as we transition into the Lakers, like the Lakers kind of tried to go all in the short term, and it hasn't quite worked this season. But I do think when you have a championship level team and you have a shorter window, like, you know, would you rather have James Wiseman in 2027 or like Miles Turner right now and like almost lock in you're the favorite? And of course you got to stay healthy and like, you know, other teams can make moves that change that dynamic. But to me, if it came down to that, I think if I'm the Warriors, I would do that. I get why they wouldn't. I get the hype on Wiseman. I see it. I like him, but I do think that's the type of move that, you know, the Warriors are right there with the Suns, with the Nets, the Bucks. Like, I think they're at that level where they could win the title as is, but you get Miles Turner. I think to me, you probably are the favorites with the way things have played out thus far.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, Miles Turner is 25. Like, he's not old. You can sign him to an extension next year and you can have him for, you know, 3 or 4 more years and you're in a very good place organizationally. But yeah, let's move to the Lakers. Let's talk about a different kind of performance than what we're talking about with the NCAA tournament. They want to help your performance in the bedroom. Joy Mode, you know, just like on the basketball court, sometimes you might have an off night. Maybe you're playing okay and you want to take your game up a level even. That's where Joy Mode is going to come in. Don't grab some over-the-counter pills that you see at a gas station. They're going to often contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, carry the risk of several other health problems down the road. That's why we've partnered with Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to helping men perform better across their core functions. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. And get this, all ingredients have been assessed in peer-reviewed journals and researched in humans. Imagine this, it comes in a palm-sized packet like your favorite electrolyte powder. Just simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water 45 minutes before sexual activity begins, and you're going to watch the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to use joymode.com for 20% off with code GAMETHEORY. That's G-A-M-E. T-H-E-O-R-Y. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GAME THEORY. Not only is this the only supplement you'll need in the bedroom, but it also supports blood vessel support, cardiovascular and heart health, athletic performance, blood pressure, and general erection function. So why settle for anything less? Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better with Joy Mode? What a start to the year for the Lakers.
What a year.
So let's just set the table here. And before I let you kind of go, having been around the team as much as you've been, you're going to be able to explain this much better than I can. So they are 12-12 right now. They have a negative 1.6 net rating, which is 22nd in the NBA. They have played, according to Basketball Reference, the fourth easiest schedule in the NBA. They have also had a lot of absences due to injury, due to COVID. It seems like it's been kind of hard to nail down what the lineup is going to look like night to night in Los Angeles. So I'll just give you the floor. I mean, what the fuck is going on?
this stat will, I think, kind of sums up the Lakers season. LeBron James has yet to play four consecutive games this season, which is just absurd. And they still have the issue, not as bad this season. Actually, the Russ and AD have kind of started to figure out their chemistry, where you know, their two-man game has been better, and it's kind of been the foundation of those non-LeBron lineups. But, you know, going back to the last two seasons, the Lakers have really struggled whenever LeBron's been off the floor. They've been, you know, double-digit negative net rating. So it's been better this season, but having LeBron miss half the season, like, I mean, that to me ultimately is why they're 12-12. I think if LeBron plays in every game, or even half of those games, we're looking at a team that's, what, 15-9, 16-8, something like that. So I do think they've dropped some games that they otherwise would have won had LeBron not been there. And it's hard to, like, I don't judge this team when LeBron is out, because I'm just like, if LeBron's out, this team is losing in the first round. Like, this team might not make the play. Like, you know, depending on how long he's out, they might not even make the playoffs. So I don't really judge them too much when LeBron is out. Now, that being said, a big reason why they've stated they got Russell Westbrook was for those non-LeBron, you know, games. If LeBron wants to take a night off or whenever he's off the floor, we solve it this way. And as I said, it's gotten better, but they still have dropped game. I mean, they lost to the Thunder twice without LeBron, right? And not only lost to them, but blew a 19-point lead and a 26-point lead in embarrassing fashion. I mean, it was just awful. And so they've had some really bad losses like that. Yeah. And I think the biggest thing, and you touched on it, like, with the injuries, the role changes, like, DeAndre Jordan has gone from starting to backup center to out of the rotation to back to starting to back to out of the rotation. And, like, you can go kind of guy by guy, and there's only a few guys who have really had consistent roles this season. Like, Kent Bazemore started the first, you know, 10 plus games and then has not played, you know, basically any, the last, like, 5-7 games has barely played. So I think you can kind of go down the list of, like, they're still figuring out what is our starting lineup. Who are our nine guys that we trust? And two of those guys are still out. You know, Trevor Ariza was the projected starter. The Lakers ideally wanted to go with Anthony Davis at center, Ariza and LeBron at the two forward spots, and go with a smaller lineup. But Trevor's missed the entire season. Now you got Kendrick Nunn, who was technically their biggest addition financially. Now, I know, like, signing-wise, like, obviously Russ, but you know, Kendrick Nunn was their taxpayer mid-level exception guy that they signed to that, you know, 5.9 million, whatever it was, and the splashiest free agency addition, and he hasn't played yet for them as well, and he was kind of supposed to be that sixth, seventh man for them off the bench. So they have two key guys that are supposed to factor into the rotation that have yet to even play. So it's tough to judge them, but at the same time, they should not be 12-12 with the slate that they've had. Like, even with LeBron missing time, they should have won those two Thunder games. That you know, I could probably look at the schedule right now and give you another couple games they should have won. So even with LeBron out, this is a team that should probably be 16-8. And then factoring in the other guys coming back, like, so it's really interesting to see kind of where their season goes, because it also feels like there's always one step forward, two steps back, where they'll win a couple games, it'll look really good, and then they drop the game to the Clippers, where, like, they just, you know, couldn't defend in crunch time and got picked apart with the same set over and over again. You know, Paul George having Luke Kennard screen from him and then kind of, you know, popping, flaring, diving, like, it just, they couldn't defend that action. And that's been kind of their thing, is, like, they're in a bunch of these crunch time situations, but when they get into crunch time, they can't get the stops that they need to get. They can score, LeBron, Russ, AD, like, and that's been my thing. Like, I think they're gonna figure that out. They kind of have figured it out, even though the numbers don't reflect. They're actually better defensively, which is hilarious to me, because watching them, you wouldn't think that. But they're better defensively than offensively. But to me, it's been, in crunch time, they can't get stops, and that's kind of something they're going to have to figure out.
Yeah, the whole project here is fascinating, because I don't know how not to overreact to this right now, while also knowing that I shouldn't overreact, because you're 100% right. I'll be honest, like, I think that one thing that's helped them defensively is taking Bazemore out of the rotation, because he was just like a Tasmanian devil of missed rotations and fouls. Like, it was a significant problem, it felt like to me. it feels like Anthony Davis, you know, as he's been healthy, has just been anchoring the defense at a level that has been remarkably high. The other thing that is really interesting to me, though, is that, like, this team is playing fast. Like, they're playing at pace, and that's obviously, like, the Russell Westbrook edition. And what everyone was very curious about was how the Lakers would stylistically look in terms of speed this season. I mean, part of this is I think that LeBron has been out, and when LeBron is in the game, they do, I think, generally like to play a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. But they're second in the NBA in pace right now, which feels like something I didn't even expect. Like, I didn't think the Russ addition would have that big of an impact on how often they're trying to get out and play at pace. Do you really think that, like, the... Has that been an emphasis, I guess, of the coaching staff to play at pace? Or is it a situation where just the addition of Russell Westbrook has so drastically altered the composition of the team that, you know, they came into the season wanting to do one thing and then they have to do something else totally?
It's been a combination of both, but I do think it is very like the Lakers, their identity the past couple years has been an elite defensive team that thrives in transition. Like, you remember their championship season, they were top two in basically every transition category, you know, points per possession, fast break points, like, so on and so forth. And you know, that was kind of their identity, where it was like, defensively they were a top three defense, and they had the length and rim protection of JaVale and Dwight in some units. And then they downsize and go with Keef or AD at the five and have these smaller kind of five out units. But the identity was rotate, scramble, play hard defensively, force turnovers, get out and transition. And then if you have to play in the half court, well, fortunately you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis to kind of solve those issues for really what was not a great offensive group, you know, around those guys. But you had some shooting, KCP, Danny Green, Keith, the playoff Rondo, ultimately Alex Caruso. Like, so you had enough guys to kind of make it work. Last season, they actually were better defensively, even though on paper the group was probably worse. But they didn't have the same level of athleticism and the same commitment to getting out in transition. So I think Frank Vogel said it heading into the season, like, part of it was just Lakers basketball is we need to generate easier offense in transition with our defense. And that's just kind of part of our brand. But another big part of that is Russell Westbrook. And he is someone that in an open court is just so much better than in a half court setting. So I think he kind of fit what they were trying to do. The issue has been they're awful on the perimeter defensively and have really been carried by LeBron and AD and Dwight with the, you know, their rim protection and paint defense. And so, you know, you've kind of seen them really struggle to contain the ball, to navigate, you know, off ball screens, to just really stop picking, like, ball handlers kind of get whatever they want against the Lakers in pick and roll situations. So, you know, they've tried to switch a bit. They've tried a 2-3 zone, and like that stuff works for a little bit until defenses figure it out. And again, so I just looked it up, like looking at their crunch time numbers, like they are better offensively than defensively. That's where it flips, is in crunch time, where they really struggle. And you've seen, I mean, it's funny, like if I were a Laker fan, I'd be having like a heart attack almost every game, because if you look at their box score, like just look at their schedule and go game by game, almost every game has come down to some level of crunch time. And it's just insane where like it's either they get blown out, you know, they've had some blowout losses, Boston, Phoenix, and like a few others, or it comes down to crunch time. It's just like, are the Lakers going to, I mean, so it's been a crazy season. But I do think that the pace thing is something Frank was preaching last season and was a big point of emphasis, that they weren't as good in transition last season. But that's just the way Russ has to play, because in the half court, we know his limitations. We know the turnovers, the lack of shooting, the lack of gravity. And you've seen that at times with him. But it's just insane how much of a force he is in transition and how he can lift a team up. Because LeBron, as you said, LeBron doesn't like to play fast. LeBron prefers... His teams historically are around league average, if not even slower, in terms of pace. LeBron doesn't love that. But with Russ, that's just kind of the sacrifice you have to make.
Do you think that we've gotten enough evidence so far to learn anything about how it's going to work in half-court settings like you said, we have played, we've seen the Lakers a lot in crunch time. They've played a lot of minutes in crunch time so far. Some of those games have been with LeBron, Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook. Have we seen enough about how they're going to try and operate in those late game settings offensively with all three of those guys on the court? Because to me, that's really going to be the telltale thing of their season. How do they make these late game playoff situations work with Russell Westbrook kind of playing, frankly, off the ball? Because the most devastating action that any team in the NBA can run, point blank period, in my opinion, is a LeBron Anthony Davis pick and roll.
Yeah, so I guess to answer your question, they haven't figured it out, right? And, and we've seen flash. You know, one interesting thing that happened earlier in the season was, against Memphis, it was the third game of the season. They ran this LeBron Russ pick and roll down the stretch of that game, and I think it was the second time they ran it. Russ. You know, LeBron hits Russ on the short roll, and all of a sudden Russ is going downhill, full head of steam, you know, catching it around the free throw line. It takes a couple dribbles. Steven Adams is defending AD, who's on the weak side block. Steven Adams rotates. What does Russ do? Dump off pass. AD gets a dunk and one. And like that to me is like, you can't do that every possession, but like that is the kind of, you know, symbiosis that you want to see from those three, where it's like, you know, leveraging LeBron as a pick and roll threat, as a ball handler, as just a playmaker. Give Russ a simple responsibility, screen, roll, you know, either make a play at the rim or hit AD with a dump off pass, which you're really good at. AD, right, finish it, you know, that boom, boom, boom. I think the very next possession, they run the same action and, you know, LeBron ends up rolling as well, like after he gives it up to Russ, and then him and AD cut into each other, and like Russ just throws a turnover, and it's like, okay, so you got to figure out the timing with that, and there's a pace to it. But I would like to see more of that, because I think you kind of made your bed with Russell Westbrook, where like you just can't put him off the ball. Like it's hard to put him off the ball, and he still has not changed and bought in fully to screening and cutting and doing these little things that ideally you would like him to do. So if you have to involve him, then make him the screener, you know, make him, treat him like a big, cause that's kind of his shooting range. And make, you know, leverage his playmaking in that way. I'd like to see more of that. Again, I think the offense kind of figures itself out. I think that those three guys are just so talented that, we've seen a lot of Russ AD pick and roll. We have seen some LeBron AD pick and roll. Again, I'd like to see more Russ LeBron, but to me, it's the defensive end where this team has a roster construction issue. And it's that they're, because of Russ, because of, once you went the Russ path, you have to play smaller. Like all the lineup data shows it, that it's, and it's not even just playing smaller, it's playing really with one big, where like Dwight, for example, you look at Dwight by himself versus Dwight with AD, and the on-off numbers are way worse with Dwight and AD versus just Dwight by himself. With AD, it's obvious, you know, AD's a center, he needs to play by himself. And DeAndre just hasn't been that good this season. But like, so if I'm the Lakers, like you really need to commit to AD as the starting center, Dwight is the backup, DeAndre is like break in case of emergency. But the issue that they've kind of faced, and Frank Vogel has been pretty candid about, is like they don't have a lot of rangy wings that can switch and protect the, you know, protect the paint in a pinch and like get a defensive rebound. And you've seen playing a Malik Monk, well, okay, he's going to get lost on this screen, or he's going to get, he's not going to help on this rotation. Right. He's not going to box out and get the rebound. Like, there's a reason why Charlotte gave up on Malik Monk. Carmelo Anthony has never been a defender. And at his, you know, late 30s, like he tries sometimes and he'll get some swipes and some steals, but like he's not a great, you know, he's not going to rotate. He's not going to, you can't really defend one-on-one. So like there's ways to pick on the Lakers perimeter guys other than LeBron and AD, that they just, losing Alex Caruso, losing KCP, losing Kyle Kuzma, like they now have all these holes on the perimeter that they just haven't been able to solve. And I think that's the one, and that's maybe where Trevor Ariza, and you don't want to put too much on a 37-year-old, you know, wing, but I think Trevor Ariza just being that body can help them in those situations. But to me, like they're a team that might need, they don't have a lot of moves to make, but it might have to be flipping Talen Horton-Tucker for some type of two-way wing that, or at least a more of a defensive-minded wing that you can trust in crunch time. Because as of right now, I know they're going to close with AD, LeBron, and Russ. I can't tell you who the two other guys. I mean, sometimes it's been Melo, but there's some defensive issues there, obviously. Malik, Taylor, like, they just don't have those two other guys that they can really rely on. And until they solve that, I think that's a glaring issue.
Well, and the craziest thing is they lost three of their best perimeter defenders in a single summer. Like, they decided to sign Talen Horton-Tucker over Alex Caruso, essentially. They could have retained both, but it seemed like there may have been like a financial component there that they just didn't want to exceed due to the punitive nature of the luxury tax. But, you know, Alex Caruso signs a 4-year, $36 million deal and looks like a first team all defense guy so far this year. And Talen Horton-Tucker has been fine. Like, he had a good first three games after he got healthy, and then afterward has not been very good. But it's, if you're trying to win a title now, I don't know how you come to the conclusion that you'd rather have Talen Horton-Tucker versus Alex Caruso. And then on top of it, you obviously lose KCP and Kyle Kuzma, who, by the way, Kyle Kuzma made some real strides defensively over the course of his last couple years in Los Angeles, and he's looked pretty good so far for Washington defensively as well. Obviously, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a very good defender as well. Losing three of those guys in a single offseason and replacing them with Russell Westbrook, Malik Monk, Kendrick Nunn, who, by the way, is not going to help the defense. Frankly, like Austin Reeves until his hamstring
injury.
Austin
Reeves.
Yeah, but, like Austin Reeves is... I think,
but you're relying on an undrafted rookie at that point. Like, it's I don't know.
And like, I liked Austin Reeves. Like, I had him as a top 35 guy in that draft. But at the same token, again, you're relying on an undrafted rookie, and that feels dangerous whenever you come down to big moments in the playoffs. As confident as Austin Reeves is, and as fearless as he seems to be, and as smart as he seems to be as a player, it's not an ideal situation. So I agree with you. Like, I think they need to go out and make a move. They need to go out and get someone who can help them on the perimeter defensively, or they could go the other way and they could go and try and get like a Miles Turner, but they would need that guy to be able to shoot at the center position. They would need a legitimate...
Which, three and D centers don't grow on trees, exactly.
They don't, which makes it hard. So there's really one, I would argue, that could potentially be moved at the deadline in Miles Turner. And the good news is that that guy may have just come available for the Lakers, and they might be able to, you know, involve a third team, do something weird like that, where they can make up the difference between Talen Horton-Tucker and Miles Turner, but... Yeah, like,
I think like they're a team that if I'm a buyout wing, like I'm targeting the Lakers of like I could have a giant role in that team. The problem is wings rarely get bought out, and you just look at the buyout market. I mean, historically, it just rarely pans out where that player makes an actual difference. And I mean, you could count the like PJ Brown and LaMarcus and Blake had some moments with the Nets, and if that team was healthier, maybe they won a title. And we're talking about those guys like PJ Tucker helped Milwaukee, like. He was bought out, right? I believe. I think so. PJ Tucker was bought out, right?
PJ was traded last year for a second round pick. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, Lakers had Andre Drummond, and that situation went horribly. So, I think, like, the truth is, like, buyout guys rarely help. And then they're also, at least recently, have tended to be bigs. And, the buyout market last year was Drummond, Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, I don't think that necessarily... help, like, again, you're not finding a Miles Turner on the buyout market. So unless, like, one guy I was interested in with them going back to last season was Dwayne Dedman. And I mean, he clearly is limited, but like he fits that profile of like a guy who can theoretically protect the rim and stretch a defense. But, he's in Miami, and I just don't know. I think, like, to your point, it is... If you're going to go the big route, and it seems Frank is kind of lean that way because of the defense and the rebounding, you need better bigs than Dwight and DeAndre. And ideally, one of them could shoot, as you said. But if you're going the smaller route, which I think is probably their preferred route, you need bigger wings. And they just don't. I mean, if you look at their rotation, they have a bunch of dudes in that like 6'3 to 6'5 range, and most of them can't defend. And that is an issue. And it was kind of like, the Lakers lost two seasons because they had they shot historically poor. I want to say they shot like 28% in that Phoenix series, and it was like one of the worst figures ever for a six-game series. And they went out and tried to solve that. Malik Monk, Wayne Ellington, Kendrick Nunn, Carmelo Anthony, like they added some shooting, some legit shooting that they haven't had the past couple of years. But then they created this defensive problem, and it was like you kind of had the formula of an elite defense with a middling offense that could be great in key moments because you had LeBron and AD. And all of a sudden, like, you lean all the way in on offense when you're 22nd in offense. It hasn't really panned out.
Right.
But you create this offensive, you know, surplus of shooting, but you also created a massive defensive hole that just hasn't, you know, you just don't have the defenders. And AD can only do so much. LeBron can only do so much. And I just don't, like, I mean, I said, I thought their ceiling defensively was like 10th, but with what we've seen, they might be lucky to get to 10. And right. I don't really see that happening. So it's going to be fascinating to see kind of what they do, because they don't have a lot of trade chips. It's really Talen, Kendrick, and maybe you throw in Austin Reeves as a filler if someone really likes him and is like, hey, we can get this guy on the cheap, a potential rotation player. But like, I don't really see where that upgrade is coming from.
Yeah. One name that stood out to me was Eric Gordon. I wonder, he's another one of those smaller wings that you mentioned, like guys between 6'3" and 6'5", right? But he is really good defensively, and he plays bigger than his size because of how strong he is. And you could play him between Russell Westbrook and LeBron James pretty competently and confidently, and feel like you're getting enough shooting, enough defense. I mean, look, though, like, he's at $18 million a year or so for the next 2 years, and I don't know if that's a price point the Lakers will want to pay. I think Eric Gordon would really help them, to be honest. Like, to me, like, that's a move that makes sense for them. Like, if you...
I could see it.
I would explore other avenues first for the Talen Horton-Tucker contract, but, like, if it came down to it, I would move Talen Horton-Tucker for Eric Gordon and Kendrick Nunn. Like, that actually gets you very close on the money. I don't know, though.
Like, I also think that it, too, like, if they end up flipping Talen, it's like, why didn't you just keep Alex?
I know, right?
Like, it's tough. It's just like, why? Like, you're probably not flipping Talen for someone better than Alex. And you've seen the way he's transformed Chicago's defense. And it's not just been, I mean, Lonzo's been a big part of that. Even getting DeMar and Zach to buy in, Vooch to buy in, Billy Donovan deserves credit as a coach. But Alex is just, you know, like, there's something with guys on the Lakers where, like, they both get overhyped and undervalued at the same time. And I thought that's kind of what happened with Alex, where it was like, because people, you know, because of the, you know, the dunks in transition and stuff, like, people that would go on Bleacher Report and ESPN and like House of Highlights, and, you know, people would kind of troll him and not, you know, think he's getting too much hype because of that. But then it made him undervalued, because the dude is, what, in my opinion, one of the 10 best, one of the 10, if not one of the 5 best perimeter defenders in the backcourt in the league. And his ability to defend multiple positions, do all, he does, I mean, it's cliche, but he does all the little things. He dives for loose balls. He always knows, you know, time and you know, shot clock and how many fouls you have. Like, he just does those little things that you want from a role player. And I honestly think he's better offensively than people give him credit for. Like, he's developed into a average to above average 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
He's a decent playmaker and ball handler. Like, you know, not great, but you're not, you know, gonna you know, crumble out there offensively if he's running your second unit, right? So I think he has a lot of value, and that, to me, I said it at the time and I still stand by it. Like, that was a huge mistake on their part. And I know Laker fans don't want to hear that, and I don't, you know, I don't want to keep belaboring it. I think everyone has kind of talked about it ad nauseum that covers the Lakers, but I just think that the, you know, the more distance we have from it, it's just like clearer and clearer that put Alex Caruso on this team instead of Talen Horton-Tucker, and I think they're a much better team with the way things have played out.
Final question here. Where does this all go for the Lakers at this point? Because it feels tough to really predict.
Yeah. I want to say, like, I should know this off the top of my head. I'm about to pull up the standings, because they're still, for as bad as they've been, I think the West not being great has kind of done them some favors. So right now they're the sixth seed, half game behind the Clippers for the five seed, and even Memphis has sneakily pulled away. They're a couple games up on the four seed, as a four seed. But I want to say, I think as of right now, I do think there's a scenario in which this is just a train wreck, and LeBron continues to deal with injuries, and maybe someone else in the rotation goes down, and this team's in the play-in tournament, and maybe even loses in the play. I think that's a real possibility. I would say, with the way things have played out, I would put them in the 4-6 seed range. I think they're going to stabilize in there. Again, granted, health, because if LeBron's out, they're kind of screwed. So as long as LeBron is available and AD is available, I think they're going to end up in that 4-6 range. I think already Golden State, Phoenix, Utah have distanced themselves, and they're just not going to be on that level. But I think they're a team that wins in the first, if they're in the four, I guess it depends who they play, but if they're 4 or 5, I think they win that matchup. 6, you're probably playing Utah. I kind of like the AD versus Rudy Gobert matchup, and just think that they don't have a great matchup to defend LeBron. But I think Quinn Snyder's a really good coach. I think Utah's obviously a really good team, and I wouldn't be shocked if they beat the Lakers, especially with home court advantage. So I guess I would say, to me, probably 4 or 5 seed, win the first round, and then you're in a really tough matchup with Golden State or Phoenix in the second round, in which case, as of right now, with everything we've seen, I would have to favor Golden State or Phoenix in that series. Now, I will say, I do think, again, the Lakers have an advantage, and this is when they play smaller, where I just don't think, I don't love any of those matchups defensively for those teams in, Golden State, Phoenix, or Utah. I think Draymond's probably the guy who best matches up with AD, and he did a really good job against him in the play-in tournament. But I think the Lakers were going to beat the Suns if AD did not go down. They were up 2-1. They had a first half lead in game 4. AD goes down and they lose that game. They lose the next 3 games and they lose in the first round. I think if AD was healthy, they would have won that series. And we're talking, we're viewing kind of this whole situation a little bit differently. Because remember, Denver's shorthanded, no Jamal Murray. Clippers don't have Kawhi. And, we're talking about a team losing in the first round that maybe could have made the finals. And I think with the way Giannis was playing, with the way Milwaukee was playing, you favor the Bucks in that series. But that, to me, is a similar kind of close 6 or 7 game series. And, maybe the Lakers win a second title and we're just looking at them a lot differently. But AD went down. They lost in the first round. And I think that there's kind of a bitter taste in how we view the Lakers. So for me, I do think they're a second round team right now. But I think they have the upside to win it all. I just think a lot has to go right, and Russ has to buy into stuff he's never bought into in his career. They have to find some upgrade either at center or on the wing, and that's easier said than done, especially when you have limited assets. So right now, I'd probably pick them to lose in the second round, but I think you could tell me they're the 10 seed and lose in the play-in, and you could tell me they're the 4 seed and win the championship, and I would believe either outcome. It's just everything's on the table with this team, in my opinion.
I think I agree with you on that totally. I think that the thing that I want most, the road, and the thing that I would just like to see most, I would like the Lakers to be the 4 seed, have a 4-5 matchup with the Clippers, then move on to play Phoenix in the second round as the 1 seed, then play Golden State in the Western Conference Finals as the 2 seed. I think that's probably what Adam Silver is rooting for as well, because they're just storylines.
We need a Golden State Lakers matchup.
Yeah, all 3 of those series, that's exactly what Adam Silver is wanting. And by the way, I don't know that the Lakers get by any of those series, to be honest. Yeah. I don't know that they would be guaranteed.
Kawhi comes back. That's a tough. The Clippers might be the best team in the West if Kawhi comes back, right?
Yeah,
they're up there.
I love the Clippers. I wish we had more time to talk about the Clippers, because good God, what a fun team that they're just fighting and battling every single night. And Paul George is a legitimate top 5 MVP guy, in my opinion. And Ty Lue has coached his absolute ass off this season, but man,
I have a quick one for you. What do you think of the hot seat and Frank Vogel and some of the flack that he's caught?
Look,
is it dessert? Because I don't think it. I think it's been overblown.
Not yet.
And I'm like, I think he like you always. Whenever you have a team that's underachieving, some of it falls on the coach, right? And getting guys to buy in, and like I think there's rotation things with him of continuing to play two bigs. Some of the closing lineups that he's gone with and not adjusting late in games, I think you can put on him. But again, we're talking about not re-signing Alex Caruso. We're you know, shifting the entire rotation for the third straight season. I mean, this is the third straight season. They basically have, you know, a brand new rotation, brand new starting lineup, brand new bench rotation. And then Russell Westbrook not being like a perfect, like, I think there's other characters to blame first before Frank, but it feels like his seat isn't hot and it's not necessarily warm, but the dial is turned up a little bit where the, you know, the, there's been some, there's a lot of outside noise and pressure there.
Yeah. Look, here's what I would say. You know, you needed to play that a little bit closer than I do. I would blame Rob Pelinka more than I would blame Frank Vogel for these problems. For all of the reasons you said, structurally, this roster is a mess defensively. Like, there's just not a way around it. Like, I don't know what they're supposed to do defensively to fix it with this current roster construction. Then you go out and you make the Russell Westbrook trade, moving high-level defenders within that trade. I think that, to me personally, for the situation the Lakers are in so far, 24 games, I believe, into the season, I put that on Rob Pelinka more than I put that on Frank Vogel. Like you said, like Frank Vogel's made some choices. And at the end of the day, I would venture that Frank Vogel would be the person who would be the fall guy for all of this. Like, it's much more likely that Frank Vogel ends up being the one that would be fired if it would ever come to that. But I think that it's very, very, very premature. Very premature to put this at the feet of Frank Vogel.
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not putting the blame on anybody. I'm just saying I think there's multiple things to blame, and I wouldn't put Frank first and foremost. I would, he's in the mix, but I would probably put him closer to like fourth.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but you know what? You're the coach of a LeBron James, you know, led team. The sword almost always comes down on that guy. And if a change is, you know, if they decide that there needs to be a shakeup, and given the construction of this roster, it's going to be hard to do like a very real roster shakeup on a situation like this, just given the construction of the salaries. I mean, look, like, I don't know that I would be blown away by like Frank Vogel. Like, if it continues to go this way, and, you know, we look up in February and they're sitting here at, you know, 22 and 24, even though they're still like the 8 seed in the West, because the West is just like a big mishmash of teams in that 4 to 11 range. I don't know that I'd be blown away by the Lakers making a move, but I don't think I would agree with that move either. Like you said, like, I don't think it's on Frank Vogel at this point.
And I think, like, I mean, you can make the case, like, sure, maybe you want a more of like a Mike D'Antoni-esque offensive mind at the helm that can kind of maximize some of these pieces. But I also think you can make the counter argument, like, I'd want a defensive coach that can try to make something out of this group defensively. And even, you know, Rob Pelinka had kind of said that heading into the season, which I found a very interesting comment of, like, someone asked, like, you guys did lose a lot of perimeter depth and talent defensively. Like, you know, are you confident you guys will remain an elite defense? And he was like, well, we have Frank Vogel, and you see his system last 2 years, we've been top three defensively. Like, we're confident Frank can find a way to make this an elite defense. And that kind of felt like putting some pressure on Frank of, like, if you know, we're saying publicly that we believe in your defensive scheme and that you can do this, when I think kind of objectively looking at it, it wasn't, I mean, they're not like, this was not a top three defensive group in any form or fashion, right? Like, so it's interesting, but I think I'm with, like, we're in agreement here. I don't think it's on Frank, and I think it would be a mistake to fire him, but I do think that if they continue to underachieve, it's heading that way.
Jovan, tell the people where they can find you on all of the various social media platforms. Tell the people where they can find you and your work.
Yeah, so you can find me at Jovan Buha on all social platforms, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, for those of you who are on it.
Jovan made a pitch for me earlier to join TikTok. I think I'm in.
I'm trying to get this guy on it. So, if you enjoy TikTok, I'm on there producing NBA content. And then be sure to read my work on The Athletic and look out for Stargazing, which is coming out December 19th, which is a Sunday, and it will be every Sunday after that for 10 weeks. So we have some exciting guests, and it's also going to be on YouTube. So look out for The Athletic's YouTube channel on that. But thank you guys for listening, and Sam, thank you for having me on.
Jovan's the best, guys. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the Game Theory Podcast. Please also go subscribe to that YouTube channel. You're going to get a lot of really great content. You're going to get to see Jovan's face and terrific hairline, as well as my, like, disastrous hairline. So please go subscribe to that YouTube channel. I will have a couple of things coming this week. I think written-wise, we're going to write about the Pacers and then write, I think, a little bit about some upper-class NBA draft prospects. I will also have a podcast coming released on Friday with Matt Penny, our typical NBA draft-centric show. Until next time, though, we will talk soon. Bye.